You're listening to Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam is rejecting calls to resign after a decades-old photo surfaced of a person wearing blackface and another in a Ku Klux Klan hood. The image appears on a page dedicated to Northam in a 1984 yearbook. He denies being in the photo, but said he wore blackface another time that year while dressing up as Michael Jackson. Since then, Virginia's attorney general admitted to wearing blackface at a 1980 college party. In addition, Florida's secretary of state resigned after photos of him in blackface were publicly revealed. And a host of celebrities have recently gotten into trouble over blackface from years ago. So how did blackface come about, and why is it considered so offensive? Dwandalyn Reese is the curator of music and performing arts at the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture. Dwandalyn, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first off, what was your reaction as photo after photo of different people, high-profile politicians and others in blackface coming to light?
I think my reaction these days is just disappointment and sadness.
And was it any surprise to you that so many people have this somewhere in their past?
It really isn't, and that's probably because I've been studying this and I understand the pervasiveness of this practice, this performance practice.
So when asked by CBS News about whether he would resign, this is what Governor Northam had to say.
Right now, Virginia needs someone that can heal. Virginia also needs someone who is strong, who has empathy, who has courage, and who has a moral compass. And that's why I'm not going anywhere.
Dwandalyn, do you have any thoughts about his decision so far to stay in office?
No, I don't, actually. And I think it's an interesting situation that the state of Virginia is going to have to work out and the people of Virginia about where Governor Northam really goes from here. I'm not going in a position to second judge, but it does provide a difficult circumstance for people to kind of deal with this admission and to deal with this knowledge and how that state, which I'm a resident of, how people choose to move forward.
And let's define blackface. I think people have probably seen at least some of the pictures, the images that we're talking about. But in general, when we talk about blackface and performing in blackface, what are we talking about?
Well, what is most important is to really understand the history of how this came about. It started in the 1830s with white actors blacking out their face with cork or grease or whatever they had at their disposal to create caricatures on stage of African Americans. And these caricatures would use language, speech patterns, music, and dance to really make fun of African Americans and in grotesque depictions of African American values and traditions, and really lampoon them as something lesser than the white audiences that were enjoying these performances.
So for something to compare it to in the early days of theater, for instance, in Shakespeare's times, women were not allowed on stage, and men often played a woman's role dressed as a woman for these plays that had, you know, both men and women in the cast as characters. But this is very different, isn't it?
It's very different. It's meant to dehumanize African Americans, which is already a situation that they've been placed in due to being enslaved in this country, but it's a mechanism to separate them from whites in a way that not only objectifies them but sees them as less than perfect than their white counterparts. And so it's a painful exercise in how people are treated or believed, and its pervasiveness and how it's spread throughout the country and was really the first form of popular entertainment, really spread these caricatures across the country in a way that it came to define who African Americans were in many people's minds and opinions.
You just touched on something that I wanted to make sure we talked about, because it was something that I learned in preparing to speak with you today. This was an incredibly common form of quote-unquote entertainment for a long time. I did not realize how big a part of American entertainment culture this really was.
Yeah, it was really embedded in the culture and the performance tradition, so much that it carried on into the 20th century and even into the 21st century. It was not only the blacking up, but it was the jokes that were told. It was in the performance of the straight man and the jokester, and really a whole stage performance that really defined minstrelsy along with the blacking up element.
We are talking about the many high-profile public figures who are finding themselves having to answer for wearing blackface in the past and in the not-too-distant past. We're talking with Dwandalyn Reese. She's the curator of music and performing arts at the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture. And I also found it really interesting that this was actually a form, again, in large quotation marks, of entertainment that took place in the North. And for a lot of Northerners, they did not have personal experiences of interacting with African Americans.
They did not, certainly not the same kind of experiences that those in the South did. And in so many ways, it is a way of cultivating views of difference and also romanticizing their own imagery of who African Americans are, really depriving them of who they are as individuals and lumping them into one group or stereotype, which most of these characters really turned into. And these are the same stereotypes that you hear when people talk about portrayals of African Americans on film and on television, even on radio and in recordings.
Right. It seems like even if it was not a white person blacking their face to do this very exaggerated, very caricatured presentation of an African American, that when there were actually African Americans then in entertainment, in desegregated entertainment, they were often forced into a very similar role.
Well, you look at it in several ways. In one way, this was expected of audiences, and those performers who had aspirations to make a living in show business had to give the audiences what they wanted. So if the expectation was blackface, many African Americans donned the blackface to participate in professional careers. But they also did something very interesting. They were kind of mimicking whites, mimicking them. So there is a way of kind of taking the tools of people who are dehumanizing them and trying to signify, as we would say, trying to comment on what that actual act really means from an African-American perspective.
Are you able to give us some examples of those caricatured characters, and maybe then, if you are able to, the examples, like you just said, about African-Americans kind of turning it around on the white performers?
Well, a good classic one, and you had mentioned Shakespeare in women, is the mammy figure. Quite often, not only caricaturing African Americans in general and men, but many people portrayed women in that way. And so there's a whole nother history about the dehumanization of women and African American women. And that mammy figure, if you look throughout the history of film and television, appears in so many guises. She's a smart mouth woman, or she's also very wise and very grounded. And so you'll see that figure appear in much of the storytelling, that the visual storytelling that we have. Another character is the Jezebel, who is fast and hypersexualized and becomes a type, a stereotype that you will see particularly in the older films of the early films of the 20th century. It becomes a type that really, even though it evolves throughout the decades, it becomes one of the limited images that African-American women can be perceived in. The dandy, the real slick character who can talk himself out of trouble or is a con man. Once again, you think about the films and television characters and where their roles for African-Americans. So you can see how many of these caricatures, which become stereotypes and embedded in the popular perception of who African Americans are really spread not only throughout the country, but over the decades and over the past century and a half.
We're talking about the history of blackface with Dwandalyn Reese. She's the curator of music and performing arts at the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to all of these instances of blackface coming to the surface? Should Virginia Governor Ralph Northam resign over his blackface scandal? Should any politician who's in the same position? What questions do you have about the history and the impact of blackface? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. You can also tweet us at CentralTimeWPR. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment. Stay with us here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson. We're talking about the history of blackface with Dwandalyn Reese. She's the curator of music and performing arts at the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture. And we want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to the unearthing of all of these photos of white people wearing blackface? Are there any cases in which blackface is okay, or is it always offensive? If you're a person of color, how are you affected by these many instances of blackface worn by public figures and others? What questions do you have about how this tradition came to be? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR. And Dwandalyn, there was a recent poll by the Pew Research Organization came out this week. It shows that 34% of Americans say blackface is, quote, always or sometimes okay as part of a Halloween costume. What does that say to you about the understanding of what blackface means?
It sounds like people don't understand the significance of blackface and how it resonates with African Americans. And part of that understanding is an empathy about the history and really delving into the history and see what the intention of the act was and how it impacted people on a long-term basis. And, you know, to frame it as a Halloween costume is something fun really takes away from its intention and impact in shaping how African Americans have been viewed and treated in society.
Let's go to the phones at 800-642-1234. And Elizabeth in Madison is up. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I have watched with my daughter a movie called Holiday Inn. It's a very old movie with Bing Crosby and another white female actress. And it was appalling to me the first time seeing this movie where they did an ode to President Lincoln and how he freed the slaves, apparently. And everybody in the band put on blackface. Bing Crosby put on blackface, along with emphasizing lips and doing things with their hair. It was horrific. But I have used it as a teaching tool for my daughter of things that are not acceptable, and it really has resonated with her. She's now 20, almost 21 years old, and it actually was an amazing teaching tool, a sad commentary on how people thought that was acceptable, especially there were African Americans in the film. I just can't even fathom that would be acceptable. It's hard for me to wrap my brain around that.
Thank you so much for that call, Elizabeth. And Dwandalyn, that brings up a really interesting point because there are so many things in older movies or even television shows today are recognized as very offensive, whether it's to people of color, whether it's to women. What lens should we be looking at those past works through, or should we be putting them on the shelf?
That's an interesting question, and it's a complicated question. You look at these films and TV shows for their entertainment value, but you also have to bring a critical lens. I think it's more than just saying it's a product of the times, but you have to understand the social and cultural and historical context in which these images are circulating, and also the complication that in many of these performances, there were African Americans sitting alongside these performances and having to be subject to them, and putting yourself in someone else's shoes, how much that must have felt to have to take that on and participate it in a way. It's, you know, you can't erase history. What exists, it exists. But you can give a critical lens to it and how you choose to interpret and absorb what's being presented to you.
Let's go back to the phones, and Kurt in Appleton is up. Hi, Kurt.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you have to share?
Yeah, I was listening to your program and wanted to call in. And it's just really interesting, and your speaker is doing a great job of you talking about this is not as cut and dry kind of pieces. I relate to the person taking the screen was when I was in Madison in the 80s, UW-Madison, there was a fraternity group that dressed in blackface on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which was the campus really got upset. And, you know, they were reprimanded and all those things. So that was never okay. But, you know, earlier that year, people would be dressing up as Michael Jackson because, you know, Thriller was popular. So, you know, that was 40 years ago, 35 years ago. I guess where do you draw that distinction between where it was intentionally malicious or it was just, you know, I suppose a sign of the times, or just, you know, maybe ignorance is actually the better way to put it, not defense.
Thanks for that call. I want to make sure Dwendolyn has a chance to respond to that. So, Dwendolyn, that is an interesting question, because I think one of the responses to all of these situations that have come up is that, well, it depends. Are you doing it as kind of an homage to someone, or are you ridiculing someone? And I believe that the Florida public official who had to leave his position had dressed up as a Hurricane Katrina survivor, not at all a kind representation. Is there any difference? Is it ever okay to portray someone of another race?
You know, it's a question of that portrayal, which is also pointing to the roles of the history of what blackface has always meant and the power dynamics. You know, white people had the power. They had the power to appropriate someone's image and perpetuate it across the country. And so I think it's very difficult to separate blackface from that history and from its impact and influence. I mean, obviously, dressing up in blackface on Martin Luther King Day is an affront, and it's obviously making a statement. It is not an affirmative statement about African Americans in this society, and it's meant to offend. But then you think again, if you're imitating Michael Jackson, why do you have to blacken up your face? What is the subtext that people are really not getting? You can imitate Michael Jackson without blacking up your face. So why is it that people seem to look at that as kind of an innocent sense of appropriating someone's image more so than it would have meant historically in another circumstance? I think if you start to not separate the history of this practice and how it has impacted and how it has shaped the lens of race and the treatment of African Americans, you come to realize that there's not a point where it's okay. I think we're trying to get to a point where this is not tolerable, that it affects and impacts a segment of our society in a profoundly negative way and is a hurtful and painful reminder of the place that African Americans have been put in this country throughout history.
A caller who we don't have time to take on the air said that it's a different context today than it was before. He has an antique collection of black memorabilia. He's white, but he and his black friends are able to laugh about it. He's wondering why it's not okay for him to laugh if his black friends are. What would you say to that?
I mean, part of the laughter is the absurdity of it. I mean, you turn it on its head and you look at the irony. It is absurd, but it's also very real. And I can't overstate how much the where the lack of empathy and understanding Black pain and how this has really shaped an image. So many people, as a means of coping, try to make fun of the things that give offense. So you have to think about that in the grand scheme of things. And if you're coming at it with an empathy and an attitude that you can see this for the absurd, but still understand that it's painful for a lot of people, and it has tremendous power in how it has shaped our values over time.
And very briefly, Dwendolyn, as we run out of time, it must be difficult to see these images come out, but is it good that it's getting all this attention, and does it maybe represent a turning point for the U.S.?
Well, that remains to be seen if it's a turning point or not, but I think that we're having a dialogue, and I've done many interviews over the last week, is a good thing. It's elevating the profile of the significance of this performance tradition and the impact of this performance tradition and how it has shaped our attitudes about race and African Americans in society.
And we'll have to leave it there. Dwendolyn Rees is the curator of music and performing arts at Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture. She joined us to talk about the history of blackface and the many instances recently of public figures having images from their pasts wearing blackface come to light. You can keep the conversation going on Twitter at Central Time WPR.